Penguin Random House Audio presents The Burning Island by Hester Young. Read for you by January Lavoie. In the dream, I wear his eyes like a pair of sunglasses. His gaze colors my own. His thoughts, so focused, so clouded with desire, overpower mine. I leave the woman that I am behind and become him. The first thing I see is the girl, her face and chest lit up by the flashlight in her lap. She's stretched out on a hammock, arms splayed above her head in a posture that communicates boredom, a certain impatience. A slouchy teenager, Asian, with a ponytail and a thin, delicate nose. Her dark, thick eyebrows hang like marks of punctuation above her seemingly pupilless eyes. She wears a gauzy white shirt with buttons going down the front. Even in the dark, I can see her bra beneath the fabric. The girl sways side to side in her hammock, suspended between trees, surrounded by warm, dense forest. The rocking beam of her flashlight makes me feel seasick. Around us, the night is alive with the sound of frogs, but I scarcely notice their chirping, scarcely register the plants tickling my arm or my knees, caked in dirt, as I crouch on the ground, watching. Watching her. She rocks back and forth, waiting. When nothing happens, she rolls off the hammock, annoyed. Points the flashlight to the sky and then switches it abruptly off. For a moment, we're in total darkness. The light blinks on and off again. On and off. 3 times in slow succession. A signal, though not to me. She isn't expecting me here, though she should be. It's all been leading to this night. Her and me, alone together at last. My feet are beginning to tingle, deprived of blood too long by my awkward position. I rise slowly to my feet. Giant leaves brush at my cheeks, and a mosquito pierces my neck. I dispatch him with a quick, silent pinch. Listen for any indication that someone is coming, responding to her flashlight. The forest remains still but for the song of the frogs. She flips off her light with a sigh. "This is your chance," I tell myself. "If you're going to do this, it will be here and now." I push slowly through the brush, advance on her in the dark. Her flashlight flicks on when she hears me coming. "Hey!" Her beam bounces around the trees, trying to get a lock on me. "I've been waiting forever. I didn't think you'd..." And then she sees me. Sees who I am. Her lips part, and we both know what will happen. "Oh," she says. "Oh, shit." I let it sit between us. Oh, shit is right. There's no turning back. It's going down now. I have fought against my urges long enough. She points the flashlight at the ground so that I can't see her expression.
"I guess you knew I'd be here."
I nod. Of course I knew. I didn't know if she'd be alone, but I knew exactly where she'd be. How many times have I watched her out here, watched her laughing, arguing with her sister, hanging on her stupid boyfriend? I've tried to keep my distance, to do nothing more than watch, but it isn't working anymore. I move in toward her. Her shape is so strangely familiar. The height, the slope of her shoulders, the texture of her hair. But she smells different, like baby powder and something floral. I wind a lock of her hair around my finger.
"It's just us now," I say. "What are you going to do about it?"
"You should let me go,"
she whispers, but my hand cups her face and my lips graze her forehead, and she knows she's not leaving.
"Stay," I say, stroking her ear with my thumb.
She goes perfectly still, considers her options and realizes, as I have, that there is only one way this can end, that it's pointless to fight.
"You'll regret this,"
she says.
"You're going to hurt a lot of people."
She's right, of course. I will hurt a lot of people, and probably me too in the end. But people get hurt. That's just a fact of life.
If I worried about who I was hurting, I'd never get what I want. And I want this. I undo the top button of her shirt. What else can I do? I tell her. I think about you all the time. I tried to stop. She says nothing. I wonder if she can feel it, this electricity that runs through me whenever she gets close, this crazy, giddy feeling where I want to touch her so badly. I'm not supposed to want that, but I do. Maybe this is the way to do it. Maybe this will get her out of my system. I lean closer, inhaling her hair, and undo another button. Before. Tucson, Arizona. 1.
We gotta turn around, Charlie.
I jog ahead, pretending not to hear Noah, although I know he's right. I know from the chilly air, the canyon's lengthening shadows, and the beleaguered glances he keeps casting me that we can't go on much longer. The dark is coming. I take a sip from my canteen and feign optimism. This looks familiar, I call, although the rocks and scraggly trees around us look like all the other rocks and scraggly trees we've seen today. I think we're getting close. Behind me, Noah groans and wipes his forehead. His dark hair is getting long, edging toward his eyes, and the man needs a shave. I wait, listening for the slow trudge of cowboy boots through rock and dirt. When it comes, I can't help but smile. My fingers go reflexively to the engagement ring he gave me 3 years ago. This man would follow you anywhere, I think. You guys should really get around to making this official. One glance at the sky and my smile fades. The sun hangs low over the canyon, a glowing orange period that moves ever closer to the end of an irrevocable sentence. Soon I will have to admit defeat. I dart uphill to get a more commanding view and begin to scan the land below me.
We gotta get back to the trail before dark, Noah says,
and his Texas twang suits the rugged landscape.
Last thing we need is to get lost out here.
I squint down at the ravine. I just need a few more minutes.
We don't have a few more minutes, Noah tells me. It's almost dusk. That's hunting time for cougars. If we had any goddamn sense, we would have left an hour ago.
I can't argue with Noah's logic. If we had any sense, we wouldn't be here at all. Sabino Canyon has been closed to visitors for a week now, after aggressive behavior from the local mountain lion population. Normally, that would be quite enough to dissuade me from setting foot on any piece of land. I have a healthy respect for authority and zero interest in a mountain lion confrontation. But there's Alex to consider. 12-year-old Alex Rocio, missing 4 days, his face splashed all over the Tucson news. Last seen biking furiously from his home after a fight with his parents. A runaway, authorities thought, just trying to scare mom and dad. But when he didn't come back, the possibilities began to darken. Ominous words began appearing in the newscasts. Kidnapping. Abduction. Conventional wisdom says Alex Rocio shouldn't be anywhere near Sabino Canyon, a full 10 miles from his house in Casas Adobes. But I know what I saw last night. I dreamed of these familiar rocky gorges, these desert foothills, recognized them from half a dozen hikes I've taken in the park. I dreamed of a boy's bicycle lying abandoned in a ditch, an orange mongoose ledge, just like in the newscast. I dreamed of his Nikes, blood red against the mountain's muted greens and browns. I felt his fever. I felt his thirst. And after years of seeing and feeling things with unsettling accuracy, I could not dismiss this dream. It's Saturday, and Noah and I have plenty to do without traipsing illegally around a cougar-infested park. We have 2 girls at home, a household to manage, and strange new professional paths to navigate. Noah's missing a board meeting tonight for Desert Garden, the nonprofit he founded last year to bring urban farming to low-income kids. And I need to get started on my next article for Outdoor Adventures magazine to prove I'm worthy of my recent upgrade to contributing editor. You want an outdoor adventure, I think, gazing out at the mountains? I'll show you an outdoor adventure. But I-
Sample complete. Ready to continue?